Good morning, I'm Philip Hong, and welcome to another edition of The Best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by Gig Sky, Strain Print, The Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, The Chambers Plan, HomegrownKits.ca, and FYI Music News. Today's edition of the show features the Humble and Fred Jukebox. We're mixing up some interviews, as well as some conversations that are interesting and to the topic. And so, let's start with the Humble and Fred Jukebox in this segment, featuring health scares and do-it-yourself projects. We're going to start with that moment when Howard decided he had gout.
Now I got the gout. You know, when you're young, you don't think you're going to get the gout. I didn't know anyone with gout until a lady friend's father-in-law had the bad gout. He had gout from the wine. And I only thought you could get gout if you drank a lot of wine. But it's all those inflammatory foods. Mm-hmm. Inflammation foods, like, you know, cheeses and nitrate, like deli meats and meat in general.
Excess uric acid.
Yeah.
In the bloodstream. Uric acid crystals form in the joints. It's actually a form of arthritis.
Yeah. The problem is, for a couple of years now, I've been feeling this, and it's gotten worse, which is why I'm talking about it. Mm-hmm. I thought originally I just maybe, from all the walking, I might have sprained something, and it would go away, and then it would flare up. And I guess what happens is, depending on what you're eating, it gets worse or better. And
so it's just in your toes?
Just in my left big toe joint.
So you would sing, "Don't feel it in my fingers, I feel it in my toes." Something along those lines.
I don't think you're taking my gout seriously.
Alas, poor uric acid.
I don't think you're taking it seriously.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all right, man. It's all right.
Throw it up here.
Gouty toe.
Throw it up on massage.
Nah, you know, and again, someone just sent me a note. They thought it was arthritis.
Well, it's a form of arthritis.
It's a form of arthritis. Where's the note from the gout guy?
Well,
here it is.
There. Yeah.
But the more I read about it yesterday, I guess for the longest time, I never would have thought, because I gave up the red wine. I thought, well, I just must have a bit of arthritis on my toe. And it turns out, Steve Hagee.
Shaka Hagee.
He's a great guy.
He's our poster boy, right?
Huh.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
He made our posters for us.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy.
He's a Superman.
So he suggests that maybe it's arthritis. I'm going to go to my doctor. Yeah, you said your mom had it, but is there, like, from what I've read, the cure or the way to treat it is diet related mostly. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of stuff you can do for it.
Yeah, I think, what do? I forget. You drink
apple cider.
Yeah, that kind of. Yeah, there's remedies that way. And I think there is medication, but I think for a lot of people, especially in the early stages, it comes and goes pretty quick. I mean, bouts of it. I don't mean it goes away forever, but.
No.
God.
Yeah. Now, this is what we're talking about. I love it. You know, it's like, if you go back, if you've never listened to the early years of the podcast, 2011, 2012, a big theme in those days was, you know, I was with this younger woman, and all we talked a lot about, you know, the relations and having sex on Dan's lawn.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm talking about my gouty big toe.
How about that uric acid?
How about that uric acid? Hey, I'll show you some uric acid.
What about your lawn?
Huh? Yeah, remember when it was all sex, 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 and I was like, oh, my toe hurts. Why does my toe hurt?
Oh, dear.
Drinking alcohol of any type can trigger a gout attack because it decreases the kidney's ability to filter uric acid and can result in a buildup.
Right.
High purine alcoholic beverages such as beer can also lead to a higher uric acid level, another gout risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. How do you get rid of gout? Take medicine you have on hand. Ice down. Call your doctor.
Here's what I love about it. It says, ask family and friends to help you with daily tasks. How does that conversation go? Hey, hon, Spencer, can you come over and help daddy because of the gouty toe? What if I can't walk up and down these stairs anymore? I'll have to live right here.
This is true. This is what my mother went through. You can get gout so bad that you can't even have sheets on your over your feet.
Right.
Great.
Just light, thin sheets mm-hmm. cause pain for gout.
There you go.
Chill out, man. Try to relax if you can. Stress can aggravate your gout. Watch a movie, talk to a friend, read a book, or listen to music.
Ask family and friends to help you with daily tasks. Mm-hmm. Can you turn on the movie for me? Charlie, take those sheets off my gouty toe.
Help me, okay, Google.
Red meat, sweetbreads, gravies, shellfish bad.
Really? Oh, sweet sodas.
You were eating a lot of oysters recently.
Yeah. Ate a ton of oysters the other day. I drink a lot of soda. You know, ever since I got my soda stream, I still drink.
That's not going to hurt you, I don't think.
Well, sweet sodas, apparently. I'm not sure what that means.
So if you throw in the drink sweet soda?
No, not the syrup.
No.
Like if you put in the syrup.
I found that not that great, Phil, by the way. Mm. Those syrups, they're a little bit too... because they're all diet syrups, I don't...
Yeah, it's kind of off.
I like just putting lemonade in there. Mm-hmm. Sergeant Sean's here, and he's got a great story about Nicole.
Yes, a group of Nicoles.
A group of Nicoles.
256 Nicoles. There's a story out of University of Calgary. A guy who...
Hold on a second. Are we finished with gout? Do you have any more gout?
That's up to you.
Gout thoughts?
I can't contribute to gout. I can only read what Dr. Google says.
Are you saying that our gout has run its course
can
on
you
this
see
program?
It? Can you see it?
No.
Like when you look at your toe, is it inflamed or anything?
So far, no.
Is this why you were hey Googling all day yesterday?
I hey Googled some gout stuff, yeah.
Didn't want to get up and walk around.
Because I need help with my daily tasks.
Yeah. Family doing the chores for you.
Daily tasks.
That's a good way to suck people into doing stuff you don't want to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I get to the point when I can't do anything because of the gout, there's 250-some-odd Nicoles involved in this story.
Yes.
Sean Sargent, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
The same Sean Sargent that told us last week about some other thing that we can't remember. Yeah, what was that story about?
Anti-aging.
And now with another episode of Anti-Aging.
Oh, great.
Here's Sergeant Sean.
I'm never going to live that down.
No, sir.
No.
But yeah, so there was a guy at the University of Calgary that went out one night, met a girl named Nicole at a bar, club, something like that, and got the wrong number and wanted to meet her.
Oh, she liked him and gave him her number, but
yes.
There was some, he copied it down wrong or something.
Like that. Yeah. Maybe she gave him the wrong number. I don't know. But it all ended up, he posted on, or sent an email out, a mass email to all the Nicoles at University of Calgary, and they all got this message, and it was pretty funny. They created a Facebook group for it. They all joined, and they thought this was the cutest thing. They wanted to help this guy find
Do you think they thought it was adorable?
I think so.
For TIFF only.
Oh, adorable.
Yeah, so how did he finally track down the Nicole?
So, yeah, this 256 group of Nicoles, a bunch of them met, a handful. I think it was about 12, 15.
Some met.
And they went out, and they agreed they're going to get this guy together. The Nicole that was the original Nicole, he was
the real Nicole.
The real Nicole, yep. Oh, wow. You're punny today. This is good. But the...
I'm not sure what
you
that means.
You have been punny. You have been.
Where's the pun in the real Nicole?
The real McCoy? Real Nicole.
Oh, I see. I didn't even mean to do that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So the actual...
Yes,
the
actual
original Nicole.
Yeah. The actual Nicole. It was not in this mass email for some reason. He emailed 256 of Nicoles that were not the Nicole he was looking for.
Oh, how disappointing.
And all those Nicoles helped find the actual Nicole.
The real Nicole.
Now, the real Nicole, did she... Was she flattered that he'd gone to this? Because I would think that's a pretty bold gesture. It's like one of those things you know, you see in movies and on TV shows.
I told them when I watched Sunday Serendipity, sort of like that. You know,
he spends a lot of time trying
to track her down. Yeah.
So was she flattered by this?
Yes. And so I believe they're going later this week, they're going on a date or something like that.
Well,
it all ended up working out, and the Nicoles all helped the guy meet this
one. Wasn't that lovely? And that all worked out.
Totally
and,
heartwarming, yeah. For sure.
Unless he comes down with the goat.
Just going to say. Poor guy. Mm-hmm. Hope he doesn't get big toe gout. Damn.
love connection.
What's going to happen? What else am I going to get? I'm just going to, you know.
You'll get a few things.
I'm going to get something. Hope it's not the same something that you got. I mean, right now, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
Everything works except my left big toe hurts when I walk sometimes. Hey, Sean.
Hey.
Great story.
Thank you. I tried to make it like nice and friendly today.
Yeah, it was great.
Ruining my anti-aging story last week.
Back to our medical file. Apparently, and I only thought, like, I've had a tetanus shot within the last, I'd say, 10 years for sure, because, well, maybe even less, because I've cut my eye on a rusty metal, and I got a tetanus shot, and I also cut my hand both times for stitches on a broken wine glass, and I think I got a tetanus shot then. But you're telling me now that everyone's supposed to get tetanus shots.
Oh, yes.
Well, when I was at the doctor a couple of months ago, she said, "Fred, have you had your tetanus shot?" And I love it when they ask that question. It's more like, "You tell me." Like,
you have my record.
That bugs me. I don't know why all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's what I asked you yesterday. I just thought they were the kind of thing where you get a tetanus shot if you've come into contact with rusty metal.
Right.
Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, it used to be that thing. Not dog bite.
I thought it was a school requirement. Like, you had to have certain shots.
Yeah, but when you were a kid, I thought you got a tetanus shot when you were a kid, and that was it for life.
Right, as the immunization. Excuse me. But the tetanus shot actually weakens over time, so you have to have boosters once in a while.
How often do you need a tetanus shot? Every 10 years. If you experience a puncture wound, which I have, it's best to get a booster shot regardless of when you had your last tetanus shot.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more tantalizing, sensual conversation coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Here's your clue for the next segment. It features bathroom fittings. But first on The Best of Humble and Fred, we have a couple of very, very important announcements.
Hey, more flexibility has been added to the data plans at GigSky. Go around the world like Pelé. If you went around the world, you could use your GigSky in so many places. North American and Europe regional plans now include more options. Plus 1 gig and 2 gig data plans costing less than before, Phil.
Yes.
Going to Asia, are you?
Asia, yes.
We're working really hard to offer significant price cuts, more data, more plans. It's on the way. We've also, GigSky's also added and updated the plans for the Caribbean, Latin America, and Middle East Africa. To view the complete list of improved GigSky pricing, head to the website. What is the website, Phil? GigSky.com.
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 Visit the Humble and Fred website for a free sim.
All right.
Yeah.
Learn from others on your cannabis journey by simply tapping the Strain Print app, which you can get free on Apple or Google Play. Why don't you do it? See what strains are providing the highest efficacy for symptom treatment. For example, what's the most effective for backaches, headaches, anxiety, and other things people have? Maybe you've got the palsy. I don't know what you've got, but, you know, the chances are somebody on the strain print community will be able to tell you what they've used to make the journey a more pleasant one. Want to learn more? Visit strainprint.ca. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, at strainprint, and on Facebooks. It's like the Fitbit of weed.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. This is the Humble and Fred Jukebox on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. This series highlights some wonderful conversations as well as interviews alternating between each other. Hey. We're going to begin this segment of the show. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you so much for listening, by the way. We're beginning this segment with a certain do-it-yourself project. It features Howard, and I think he requires a bunch more parts. It's not done yet.
So yesterday we had quite a discussion about, you know, my lack of handiness or my lack of ability to fix anything. And wouldn't you know, I go upstairs and I could hear some dripping in my shower. And I went to investigate. And I turned the handle, and all of a sudden the water, like it's almost like it skipped and stripped the actual shower handle. So all of a sudden now I couldn't get the water to shut off.
Oh.
So I opened up the handle, and I just took it off. So now I've just got the plumbing thing. So I got the water off. That was job one. Then I had to go to the Home Depot, and I found another handle thing. What are they called?
Well, it depends. The handle or the, like, valve?
No, the handle.
Oh.
Oh.
Got that. Yeah. Went there. Got it. Didn't fit. Then I went down to my other shower, took that one off, put it onto my shower right. so I could use it, and I think I fixed it. Not 100%.
But that, now there's another shower.
Now I got to go back to the depot and get another one for the downstairs shower.
So the problem was the handle?
Well, they're not very good. I don't think they're of a very good quality. I mean, you can check it out if you want. But, yeah, it was just kind of ironic. We were talking about how I don't know how to do anything, which is true. And then I went up there and I fixed her somewhat. Like, I got it working. I was very proud of myself.
So, no, I'm just surprised. It's usually, if the water is dripping, it's the valve, not the handle, unless the handle, I should say.
Well, the handle's plastic, and it
wasn't allowing the valve to shut off.
It wasn't shutting, because when I took my, what do you call them, the pliers? The pliers? When I took my pliers, I am the pliers. I took the pliers, and when I turned the valve off, I could get it to stop.
Right. Good.
And then I got my new one, the one from the shower downstairs, and I put it on my shower, and then I snapped the acrylic casing, but I was able to tighten it to a point where I used the shower. So I would say that problem was mostly solved.
But you cracked the...
I got to get a new one. Yeah.
It sounds like you got to get two.
I got to get two.
Yeah.
I got to get two. But I did get it to work. I was pretty...
wow.
I had all my tools.
How manly.
I had all my tools. I had the screwdriver. I had the Robertson. And then my other tool, the pliers.
The pliers.
Three or four years ago, Delise bought me a tool belt. Which was very sweet.
It is very sweet.
But I'm never of that. I'm never so involved in a job I need a tool belt. That's for, like, contractors and stuff all day long. You need the tools right at hand, right? Almost like a holster, like you're a sheriff with a holster or something. And I've never really used it. I feel bad, but just all my applications are like those. Just short, something needs to be fixed. It's like not an 8-hour... It doesn't involve 8 hours a day.
I see you, do you ever just surprise her by just wearing the tool belt?
And naked? Yeah. Mm. Oh, well.
I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I just wear the tool belt naked and socks.
Ooh.
And a t-shirt. Just shirt that thing. But you're right. When you do your work, do you have a pencil behind your ear?
No.
Sometimes for measuring?
No. My uncle used to. I used to think that was so great.
Yeah. In case you needed a pencil, it's behind your ear.
Mm-hmm. But you have to have a certain type of ear for that, too.
You do.
Yeah.
They've got to be close to your head. If you have anything like ears that stick out a
bit. Like mine. But yeah, I did this job yesterday. It's a pretty big job for me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I cracked the replacement handle... I actually said this to myself. I may have said it out loud. I said, this is why I don't do anything. Because it seemed like a pretty simple job. You unscrew it, take the handle off, put the new one on, I screw it.
How did you get the wrong handle? Did you not take the old one to Depot?
I did.
Well, how would you end up with the wrong handle?
I don't know. I'll tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll tell you, I felt as dumb as you think I am now. Because what I did is, my handle has a little bit of a horseshoe kind of shape to it, how it fits onto the casing.
Right.
And the one I bought was completely round, and it did not. I think here's why.
So why did you buy it?
Because I was concentrating on the hole.
Or you're in a big hurry.
No, sir. I know you'd like to paint me as an impatient, petulant child. But in this particular case, I took the old handle, and I was concentrating on the hole where the screw would go in. And so when I was looking in comparison...
You held them side by side, but didn't see the different shape.
Not initially.
You got home.
After I got home, I was like, oh, that won't work at all because it's round and the casing is horseshoe shaped.
Was there a way to ask someone about it?
I had to ask somebody where... You guys will laugh.
That would have taken time.
Oh. No. Fred, man. This new Howard is much more patient. I took the old.
Oh, listen, you were high. Mm.
Listen.
Okay.
I took the old one with me. Check. I asked somebody where the plumbing supplies were. Check. I went down into the plumbing supply aisle, and I found my aisle with all the replacement faucet handles. And that was one detail that I missed.
See, if I'm not sure, I always ask. However, I must say, and not to pick on these companies, do you remember when Home Depot first opened? I think we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
They had an expert in almost every aisle, and that was sort of their opening.
Yes.
Slowly but surely over time, then it was one expert for every two aisles, then three aisles. And then now it's like you go in there often, and it's like not only is it hard to get help, they're annoyed when you ask, mm-hmm. I've noticed.
Well, I don't go in there that often.
Because there's so many people asking,
sure.
Right? Yeah.
You may be surprised. I don't go in there that often, but I have had a pretty good experience.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I got in, I asked somebody. They told me where plumbing was, and I asked somebody in the plumbing where these replacement parts were, mm-hmm. and I had all of it down. I did everything I was supposed to, except I got the wrong part.
Mm-hmm.
So I will go back today with the receipt. And I will get the right part. But I did. You know, the thing is, I did everything by the book. And even when.
No, you didn't.
I know.
You left the last page open.
I left one page.
Yeah.
Dude, when I found that one was round and one was horseshoe, I was like, oh, come on, Howard. Can we not get this figured out? You not do one home project, it doesn't end with water everywhere. Anyway, I just thought I'd update you that I actually did some man work yesterday morning and some last night as well.
A couple of weeks ago, I was at the Home Depot in my one in Brampton, and there's a lot of contractors, and of course, being Brampton, there's a lot of South Asian contractors, and I saw a guy there last week, and he had dried drywall putty on his turban.
Oh!
You could tell he was a bit perplexed, too. I got the impression that he was in a job and then something went wrong, like you or something, and then he had to come and he seemed to be in a hurry and everything. He was covered in all this drywall in a big lump of, I don't know why that struck me funny. And I just thought, like, how diverse is this?
It's great.
Buddy boy's there doing his mud and in his thing.
He's got drywall on his turban. He's like, how's it going, eh? I got drywall in my turban. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
What are you doing playing around with drywall, though?
Oh, it's a pain in the ass.
Oh, God.
I have, yeah. Before I'm... The stairs going down into my basement, for some reason it's narrower than it should be. So the last time I took a couch in, I had to break the wall to get the couch down. Believe it or not, just crazy. And I was that size. So the problem is when I leave, I'll probably have to break the wall to get it out or hopefully sell the basement furniture with the house. I don't know. So in the meantime, I tried to fix it myself, and I'm not a good drywaller. Like, I did it, but you could see the imperfections. Anyway, the point is, when I move out, eventually I'm going to have that done by a professional because I can't. You want to talk about patience. You know, taping it, sanding it, and getting it to look where you can't see the seams. It's quite an art.
You know, I was going to say, the times I've had a lot of drywalling done. That is something satisfying, though. I mean, of all the weird jobs mm-hmm. you can do around it, I've watched, you know, guys do it for real, and it seems like that would be a satisfying job if you did it well.
Oh, look at my basement.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Rob the Naked Drywaller.
Yes.
I mean, going back
Rob
20 years.
Rob the Naked Drywaller.
Oh.
There's a guy that, you know, when they know what they're doing, they have knives on their thumbs, and they can just run their thumb across something and get the measurement and bang the thing in place. And
oh, yeah, it's something.
They use the minimal amount of mud, and it's fantastic. Yeah.
They're not back at the depot the next day going, this is the wrong size.
It's the wrong putty. It's too runny.
You know, that is, and it was just ironic yesterday that we had this whole talk about how I'm, you know, useless, basically. And then I go and have this little thing happen. I thought, okay, come on, Howard, you can do this. No, I can't.
You know,
I tried, though. I was going to call you and go, what do I do? The water's going everywhere. But I thought, no, figure it out.
You know,
turn that valve off.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
We've got more with the cavalcade of conversations coming up on the Best of Humble and Fred, as well as two very interesting people coming up in our interview segments. This is the Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong, on air, online. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Philip Hong. This is the best of Hubble and Fred on air and online and free and easy. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the best of Hubble and Fred Jukebox. We are providing you with a bit of a playlist featuring conversations as well as interviews. And in this segment of the best of Hubble and Fred, we have a Canadian comedic legend. I would say he is the incubator of many comedians that are well known and that happen to be Canadian as well. Here is the venerable Kenny Robinson.
You know, oftentimes you'll hear people that host programs say things like, this next guest needs no introduction, or this person is a friend of mine. Both of these are actually true.
I do need an introduction.
Well, wait a second, son.
Okay.
Because not only is this person someone I've known a long, long time, but I don't need to read. Like, oftentimes, Amanda Barker, our producer here, will give Freddie and I a big, you know, list of this person's credits and all that stuff, a package. But here's a person that I don't need any of that to introduce.
Well, I did.
Is that
anyway.
Fair?
That's absolutely true.
Get your face right on that microphone.
I was a young man myself kicking open those doors when we hooked up.
For the last 40 years, this kid from the prairies, much like myself, he moved to Chicago and I moved to L.A., when I first met this gentleman, he was making noises in a comedy club I'd never heard before. And I don't mean him personally. I'm talking about the audience. It was a combination of laughter and shock. So, but why will one say one more thing about Kenny Robinson? A lot of people in Canada, the States, know him as a comedian. But there are a few people as a comedian you do not want to walk on stage after. And he's one of them. Please say hello to Kenny Robinson, everybody.
Thank you very much, and happy birthday. So that's a good thing about Facebook. We know when it's people's birthdays.
It is a good thing. And it's also a good thing to kind of stay in touch with one another and just to kind of see what each other's doing. I always tell the story of the first time I headlined in Toronto. I was playing the Bay and Yorkville Club, which is a great club. And it's been turned into some kind of million-dollar condo.
Oh, it's
there.
All this. It's all condos now. It's all discos. It's all condos now. So I wish it was discos.
I went. So Kenny was somebody that had been sort of a mentor to me, and like a lot of people in Canadian stand-up, and he said, hey, Howard, congrats, you know, you basically do Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. He goes, hey, I'm going to come down Wednesday and then see your first night there. I go, great. He goes, I'm just going to go on and do a couple minutes. I said, sure. And you went on and did, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 minutes and just destroyed. Like, it was just carnage.
I wanted them warmed up for you.
But I'm sitting there back there, going, really, Kenny? Really? You couldn't have just done something sweet? He goes on there talking about heroin and bitches, and I'm up there doing my little Jewish. Anyway, I'm from Moose Jaw.
Well, see, but it helped to make the smooth transition for you.
Yeah, it did.
After that, they're going, oh, good, somebody we can relate to again. Someone I could bring home to my mother or let my children watch. So it was a good thing.
Listen, there's a guy that it's the road less traveled. Darren Frost and Kenny have been traveling around doing this show for a long time called Rankin Vinyl. A lot of comics would, you know, at this age, you know, maybe want to calm it down a little bit, but you haven't seemed to.
We can't calm it down. This is the only thing that we know how to do. This is how we roll. So how are we going to calm down what we are? You know, it's we can be calmed down when they put that dirt on our coffin. That's when we'll be calmed down. It's
well, describe to Fred, who's probably, I mean, you've never seen Kenny in a club. What kind of show people, when they come and see you this week and wherever you are,
unique.
Ajax. Unique?
Yes, yeah, really? Really, Ken? That's your answer?
Well, why would you calm down?
Well, I mean, a lot of guys would say, you know, it's not worth having some people in the audience get up and leave.
It's not worth me having to say what I don't want to say to have them stay. You
yeah.
know, I mean, I went, you know, for all the years I earned a reputation of being a dirty comic, and then I became probably one of the better political comics in the country, but I still didn't get those corporate gigs. So, you know, there's no point in selling out now. I may as well go out shooting if I'm going out.
Yeah, and as far as politics goes, this is the best time to be alive as a comedian.
Oh, I mean, Rob Ford was just warm up for
that's right
for you know for this man named Trump. You
he was
know?
A and silly little opener.
He had his nice little. I've got enough to eat at home, but now we've got so much more to happen with.
So you know, for the last 5 years, and for the last 25 years, a little less, Fred and I have interviewed lots of stand-up comics, famous ones, new
right,
ones.
I was gonna make that point,
yeah. And you know. one of the things we say to these young kids, and you'll love this, is, you know, hey, do you talk about this in your show? Or are you talking about the election? Are you talking about these issues? And they all say the same thing. And as a comic, I know why. They all say, well, no, I'm really not. And Fred has said to me, what is with these kids? And I always answer for these guys. They're trying to build time. So anything that's disposable, they don't want to start putting, they don't want to spend time working on a joke that won't be around in 3 months. But you, on the other hand,
this joke's going to be around in 4 years.
No, but that's what I was going to say. I told Fred the example. I went on stage 5 times last week, and I was the only one on 5 shows that said the word Trump out loud. The only guy. How many shows was I on? I have a little, because I open with a couple little Trump shots, and then I move on. But Kenny has done this for as long as I've known you. Whatever the issues are, you're going to talk about them on stage, which is refreshing. It's also scary, because you don't know if it's going to work or not.
No, but that's because, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, and the school I went to in Chicago, they had us do current events every day. So that was one of the things we had to deal with. Also, you know, the political comics and the social commentary of that I grew up enjoying and loving. So how can you not be current?
Well, plus you're a pretty you're a mature comic, so to speak, compared to a lot of these kids. I think they don't want to go there because they just don't feel equipped with the knowledge to go there.
And read, goddammit. You got the whole internet to
there
say
you go.
Everything you need. You
absolutely.
Know?
Bingo, right there. And what's wrong with coming up with a couple of lines for your show just to show that you're relevant or current?
But again, though, the Trump jokes, some were already going to become hack. Like when it came out that apparently there were golden shower parties.
Right.
I stayed up till 5 a.m. writing those riffs.
Mm-hmm.
And then but then as I'm cranking these out, I'm seeing everybody has a has a Trump getting
golden
peed
shower.
On. Yeah. Golden shower. So I thought, like, well, by Saturday night, you'll be a hack if you do any of these, you know.
Yeah.
So and then the next step was alternative facts. So everybody's banging out their alternative facts lines over,
right.
You know, for the past 24 hours.
Well,
right?
And it's funny you say that because when we were younger. You know, I went through the 80s there with Reagan, and I had a bunch of stuff in my act about Reagan. Because even then I thought, you know, this is kind of fun, and I can kind of craft a few things. And for a lot of years, that was a staple of what I talked about. The problem is, now with the internet, so alternative facts becomes a thing the last couple of days, and everybody has a chance to sort of weigh in on that game, whereas before it was just guys up on stage like you and I.
Well, I've told you the whole thing about blogging before, you know? That's why
exactly.
I don't blog anymore. It's just because everybody's a blogger now. So what would you do, Ken, if you want to mention Trump, yet you don't want to the golden shower and the alternative fact stuff? So just come up with you want to mention it, so you just come up with a different spin, your own spin.
Well, one thing I've only had one night to do it with, but I just came off and I said Trump is a I just added all these different things that he was a no tax paying, golden shower loving, grabbing, little hand, shutting down Planned Parenthood mother. So you just get a list of everything that it was.
That's right. It's great.
And just end it with that and boom. And then the only golden shower joke that I did, there were two that I liked, was he's giving us guys that like golden showers a bad name. And that one kind of had people going, you know? And then I said Trump, he really wasn't mocking a disabled reporter. He was showing you how he acts when he's being peed on. And they actually thwarted an assassination attempt. They caught some of the Russian strippers eating asparagus. So.
See, the thing about that, I love that. And that stuff will be funny in 6 months.
Yeah,
it will.
I still won't be getting those corporate gigs dropping that, but you know, and it won't get me just for laughs either.
Well, it's funny you say that about corporate gigs. I did one last February for
How
a
was
company.
It
was great.
Did it hurt?
No, and money was just fine. Thanks.
Were they mean to you?
They were. Yes, they were. But I had a discussion.
Did they have tails?
I had a discussion with the person in charge of me and my content, just literally because I had to run a joke by him. And it was just one of those things that went back and forth all day. And I finally said, I'm going to be talking to a group of adults. And it was a really mild reference. It was, and I said, you know, they're grown-ups. They're going to have had a few cocktails. And trust me, there was nothing in that. And I convinced the guy to let me do the line. And the president of the company, he was like, hey, that was fine. There's people just a little bit
You're
oversensitive.
You're so lucky. It could have easily gone the other way.
No, absolutely it could, for sure.
Can't you have Kenny Club and then Kenny Corporate, like two different...
Well, I found
out it doesn't work that way.
I found out that even my corporate stuff sometimes rubs them the wrong way. So, you know, like I think, okay, the last corporate that I did, but I did one where I was doing basically stuff that I've done on TV and political stuff and what have you, and they just froze up. You know, it was terrible. So then they complained that I had robbed the organization that they were trying to raise money for and blah, blah, blah. So, of course, that hurt my feelings for about a day. And then I thought about it. I said, well, not only did you rob them of their money, you pistol whipped them, bitch. You know
what?
Accuse me of stealing your right. fundraiser by taking mm-hmm. my fee. But I mean, I did stuff that I've done on TV and stuff that I've gotten, you know, reviews for and what have you. And they just curled up, sucked up, and died on me.
Funny, eh?
Well, Kenny Robinson, I got to get this out because everyone should go see this. If you have not seen this, man, you have robbed yourself of a necessary night of education and fun with Kenny and Darren, or just Kenny?
It's rank and file. It's me and Frosty. We're going in there.
He is just...
He's an animal. I got to talk him off the roof.
Yeah, he is. You know, it's funny. He's been on the show a bunch of times.
Yeah, well, his kids get him up early, eh? Mine don't talk to me, so it's not the same.
How old are yours now?
The oldest is 26, and they fall in 17 and 16, so.
Yeah, are the 17 and 16-year-old girls?
No, the 17-year-old is a girl, and the 16-year-old is a boy.
Yeah, I have two daughters. One's 22, and the other one's so mean. She is something. This morning, I was talking to her. She goes, I called her to, she's like, wants to wish me happy birthday. She's like, don't talk to me now. I've got to get ready for work. Oh, okay. All right.
Well, perhaps you wouldn't have a job to go to if I hadn't have educated you to the best of my ability.
So funny.
This is Humble and Fred.
K to the Kenny, R to the Robinson. I'm not very hip, am I? You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. We've got more with the hippity hoppity Kenny Robinson. In fact, you're going to hear more about his self-styled show and all the great comedians that have passed through his doors. You're listening to the best of Humble and Fred. First, a couple of very important announcements that are just as hip.
You know, Tim Niblett, he has... I'll tell you, he's helped so many Humble and Fred listeners on both sides of the border. In fact, somewhat personal, he's now involved with my brother-in-law and his wife in a strictly professional
platonic. In a platonic relationship.
No, but if you're in that situation, really, it doesn't matter how old you are. You're nearing retirement, you want some questions answered, or you're a youngin' and you have another 20 years to go and you want to know where to place your money. This is the guy to talk to, Tim Niblett. He's the retirement Sherpa. He's cool, calm, he's collected, and, well, all around a great guy and a great investor on both sides of the border. He's the retirement Sherpa. Go to retirementsherpa.ca.
Yeah, do it. Do it right now. Get Tim on your side.
Spearhead Brewing Company, located in Kingston, Ontario. Oh, they make the award-winning Hawaiian Pale Ale. I told you, it was in the Brampton Heart Lake beer store on the weekend.
Seriously.
So distribution is increasing. 6% or this West Coast Pale Ale, brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple, but not too much. Don't get the wrong impression, just that hint of fruit. Fantastic. A refreshingly dry finish. Try one. Hawaiian Pale Ale all year round, okay? All year round. Spearhead Brewing Company. Gotta love them.
This is Humble and Fred.
When I first met Kenneth, when I met Kenny, you partook quite vigorously, if I may, in the medical...
Everything.
And marijuana. Do you still smoke a little weed?
Not so much. You know, I hardly ever drink anymore. It's just... well, I don't have any drinking buddies, so I figure if you drink all that liquor by yourself, then the neighbors complain more often. He had a party in there. No, it's just me and my several personalities.
But you still, the odd, because I went through a long period where I didn't smoke any weed and I drank excessively, and then I stopped drinking altogether, and now I medicate myself occasionally. Right, Phil?
Just once in a while.
Once in a while.
Not over.
I wanted to ask, the reason I asked...
I'm too depressed to roll a joint or anything like that. That's too much activity.
The new weed is so good. And so you can target it. You can say, I'm in the mood for this. And you can get a certain weed. I'm surprised that you haven't availed yourself of this information. So.
I have gifts from people, but I've got that have sat in a cardboard box inside a tin box underneath my bed for the past year without me even going into it.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's just
Well, you get to an age, I guess. You don't want to.
It's either the age or I say, okay, I remind myself, let's smoke a joint this month. And next thing you know, the rent's due again and you still haven't lit up that joint, you know? So.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about this. And when we first met, you know, there was basically only two types of weed. There was weed and then not weed.
Yeah.
You just either had, that was it. There was two types.
Oh, I remember that one time when I wouldn't let you go to sleep at 5 in the morning. You were begging for me just to, can you please go to your own room?
Please stop talking to me.
And I go, wait, I haven't played all this Tom Waits that I just bought the other day at the secondhand record store.
But it's funny, as we get older, Fred, so you've talked about how you don't, you know, there was a time you could have 6 or 7 or 8 beers of real beer, and now you're drinking this, you know, child-friendly beer or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's definitely an age thing.
I mean, the night before my my most recent birthday, I think I had like 5 rum and cokes, and damned if I didn't spend the next day in bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. It's funny when you're younger, you don't do that. You don't weigh it. It's like, geez, if I do this, I'm going to feel like tomorrow. I think the older you get, the more you start to have those thoughts. Oh. I'd like to do this, but what about tomorrow?
Well, Hank Jr. Says hangovers hurt more than they used to.
Oh, yeah.
100%. And it was a different time. You know, think about this. In the 80s, you were, you know, in your 30s or 20s. I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. You were in your late 20s, whatever.
Yeah.
And you could drink continuous. Oh, your little Tom Waits for you.
Well, because there's always new drinking buddies to catch up with the next day. Or
but what you just said is so true. I don't have that many guys that do that kind of drinking. They're, you know, those guys in their 50s and 60s, mostly dead.
They've died, man.
That's right.
All my rowdy friends have been lowered into the grave.
When I stopped drinking last year, I had a bunch of my friends that were my age that said things like, I didn't know you had a drinking problem. And what they really mean is, I didn't know I had a drinking problem.
I didn't know we had a drinking problem, and you're abandoning me. It's like, last call.
Stay with me. Kenny wants you to go check him out. A lot of your kids listening, or a lot of the people listening who are in their 20s now and 30s, probably remember Ken. I mentioned this yesterday from Radio Free Roscoe. Do you remember that?
Yes, I grew up watching it, Kenny.
Well, that is such an embarrassment.
Didn't you play weren't you playing a bartender on that show?
No, it wasn't a bartender. I was like, I was like the Arnold from Happy Days of this place. It was a record shop, coffee shop kind of thing, and all the kids hung out. Sometimes I dished out advice.
No, it was good.
It was okay. It was, you know, nothing like being mobbed at Toys R Us and losing contact with your 4-year-old. It's, oh, it's Mickey. So, but now it's like, you know, I'll be walking down the street late at night in a neighborhood where maybe I shouldn't be walking, and I don't want to explain why I was walking in that neighborhood. And a terrible looking hoodlum will approach me and go, didn't you used to be on Radio Free Roscoe? And I say, yeah. And it's okay, I'll rob someone else. So, you know, it's,
comes in handy.
Yeah, you know, the celebrity status.
That's great.
And don't forget to take your vitamins and say your prayers.
Another thing that Kenny started years ago is something called the Nubian Disciples of Black Jesus. What's the name of the show?
Nubian Disciples of Pryor.
And what was the impetus for that? Because that's been around a long time in the city of Toronto.
It's almost 23 years, 24 years. 1995 was our first show. There's a shortage of black comics all across the country, or comics of color. And it was Def Jam was already big stateside. And I had done a couple of shows with some promoters that were trying to do black comedians and hip-hop together. And somebody was saying to Mark that perhaps if we had an audience of our own, instead of having a crossover audience and crossover references, the results would be different. So I was already planning on putting one of these shows together, and he asked me if I would, and I said, uh-huh. And our first show, we had to turn away about 250 people. It was a sellout smash. We didn't even have to advertise for the first year and a half.
So who would have been on those first shows? Yeah. It would have been you and who else?
Russell Peters was on the very first show. Russell was with us until he moved on. Let's see. So Orson Payne, he was the first act that was introduced. Ronnie Edwards, Kudar.
I remember Ron. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ronnie's back. He's doing stand up again. He's back from England. Kudar was on there. Fawn Noel, Taryn Della. So you know, most of them have moved on and what have you. But then there is the next wave. Mr. Mo from Mo and Darren from the Buzz. So actually, Mo was one of the reasons why this show first got started. I used to stick my head in the club, and the guy that was the manager at the time says, "You ought to see this Mr. Mo. He sets your race back 25 years in what he does." So I said, "Damn, I thought I did that when I was drunk. Let me see what Mr. Mo is doing that's so bad." And I'm sitting there, I'm going, "That's a bum rap, man." Because he doesn't set the race back 25 years. He just doesn't know how to set the joke up. So how come because he doesn't know how to set the joke up, the race got to be set back 25 years?
Right.
And then there's a friend of mine, Ida Sidhu. She's very active in the community. She owns a bookstore called A Different List over at Bathurst and Bloor area. And she was at a community show, and she said, "You ought to do something with this Mr. Mo." And I'm going, "I've heard this name again." And she goes, "Mr. Mo, he was bombing, and the audience started to heckle him, and I told him he needs to get off, and he told me I need to suck his dick." And she's laughing at this. And she goes, "You need to take him under your wing." So it was almost like people were, you know, the outside forces were coming to say, "Well, if you don't kick this door open, who's gonna?"
And 23 years later, you've been doing it now. Is it still like a once a month show?
Yeah, still the last Sunday of the month. And the talent pool that we're getting out is it's always growing. Differences now, the names are getting harder to pronounce because now I'm getting more kids of African descent, you know. So I'm getting more of the Nigerian names or Ethiopian names that I'm screwing up. So as one woman, Ify, says, "My tongue has been colonialized." So
other than visual, what's the spin? With the comics, is it a different style of humor? Or?
Well, the references are different. If you're, you know, if you talk about a West Indian mother and the meal she cooks and the food she prepares, it isn't going to go over with a mainstream white audience unless they know about getting that oxtail, unless they know about eating cow buddy, which is basically soup made out of a bull's penis.
I saw a kid. Sounds delicious.
I'd eat it. I'd try it.
I saw a kid at the weed club a couple weeks ago. A brown guy, and he told a story about his mother who may or may not have killed some people. You know who I'm talking about? Yeshem or Shemi? I'm telling you, he was great.
Yeah. Shamwa.
Pardon me?
Shamwa.
He was Shamwow, yes. I wish I could remember this kid's name because he's somebody to watch. You can just tell. Maybe when we're done, I'll look it up. Because I'll tell you, the way he was conducting himself, he wasn't getting a whole bunch of laughs, but you could just see he had something because his storytelling ability was great.
And he had confidence in his material.
Very much so. Okay. And I love this. But speaking of people that Kenny, you know, you talked about Russell. Ken's been around for a long time. And I wanted to quickly ask, because you were there when Norm started, Norm MacDonald, Russell Peters, Jim Carrey. I know I'm forgetting some big stars. That you were
Kevin Hart. He used to drive all the way from Philadelphia, do the Nubian show for $125.
Come on.
My kid said to me, my son says, "You ever hear a comedian named Kevin Hart?" I said, "Go in the garage, go fight past the raccoons, and there's a bunch of cardboard boxes that says taxes, and you'll find Kevin Hart receipts next to a very modest sum that he was paid."
So if you reach out to Kevin Hart now, does he remember?
I imagine he does, because the very first time he ever did TV, or I believe was my show After Hours on the Comedy Network, Leslie Jones on Saturday Night Live and Ghostbusters, first time she ever did sketch was on After Hours.
And what about guys like, you know, because I tell the story of working a few gigs up here with Norm MacDonald, and I used to, you know, the joke about Norm was, if you spent a week with Norm, the next week, wherever you were, people go, "Oh, you worked with Norm," and the reason they'd know is because you started sounding like him.
Well, when Norm
picked up his cadence.
When Norm first moved to Toronto, he stayed at my place for a week. And I think the first night, he didn't come home for 4 days. And I was like, worried, like, what's happened to Norm? So, you know, so yeah, but I mean, it's, I think Norm's, I think Harlan Williams, I think the first paid gig he ever got was one of my road shows. We're on the way, we're driving up to Newmarket. "I can't believe we're going to get money." and I'm going, "Why do you think we're doing this?" And now, he's got way more money than me. But I can't believe I didn't get money. So, yeah.
When you first saw Russell, did you think, like I saw this kid the other night, you kind of just know that kid's going to do something. Did you think that about Russell?
No, I never thought that about anybody else other than myself.
Did you see him having some talent?
Yeah, but because we were doing Chris Pongrack gigs, which was this agent that booked, if he was driving any highway in Ontario where there were four walls and a roof, he stopped and went, "Do you want comedy?" So Russell was my opener in those days, and he picked me up, and we drive, and And then later on, as I came back to Yucks and he started to get into Yucks, there were competitions where I'd be a judge and he'd come up to me and go, Kenny, I'm going, would you get away from me? The fix is in already. You know, I already got you. You don't have to ask me if I got you. I got you. The fix is in. So, you know, I liked Russell immediately, you know, from day one. But, I mean, he was saying, like, my goal is to play the Apollo. And I'm going, like, man, what do you Indians think you're going to play the Apollo?
This is Humble and Fred.
Coming up on the Best of Humble and Fred, we've got more tantalizing conversation and I would say sensationalizing as well. I'm Philip Hong. There is some shock and there is some awe on the way. This is the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. And don't forget, humbleandfredradio.com for the full episodes. Welcome back. The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong, on air and online. Thank you so kindly for joining us and listening, because this segment is going to be exciting. From a legendary decade of music, we have a legend from Britain. His name is Mike Peters. He's from The Alarm. Let's hear from him on The Best of Humble and Fred.
For many, many years, the radio station that we were working at played this man's songs. And we heard that he was coming into the studio, and thought that was pretty cool. And then all of us arrived this morning, and there's a big RV parked in our parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, what's going on? And
Chevy Chase on
that's right. It turns out that Mike Peters of The Alarm is living in our parking lot.
Yay!
How often can you say that?
Trailer trash has arrived.
Michael. You're a man after my own heart, Mike.
I thought, because, you know, he has a trailer up north.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is going on? Is Fred now, is this how he tells me he's retiring? Howie, after today's show, I'm going on the road.
Although in Britain, don't they call them caravans?
That's right. We do. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that until I saw the movie Snatch. Because Brad Pitt's character in that movie has to sell. He's selling a fucking bed.
Brad Pitt is a self-confessed Alarm fan as well. That's
come on.
Connections, yeah.
And you're Welsh.
I'm Welsh, yeah.
Now tear boy
Cymraeg.
Yeah, Dylan Thomas.
That's right, yeah.
Dylan Thomas,
yeah.
Now tear boy Spach.
But that's quite the rig out there. So what's the idea? Are you going right across Canada or through to Ontario, and that's your hotel and your wheels?
That's it, yeah. It's like a tour bus, but it's just a cut-down version, and, you know, you got a shower, you can do a dump in it. You know, you can't do that on a tour bus.
Yeah. No.
For the truck stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a luxury.
Tell me more about taking
vehicle.
A dump on the road, because that's what...
You have to put a seatbelt on.
Do you really?
You've got to wear your seatbelt, yeah.
Even if you're in the passenger in the back?
Yeah, you do, yeah.
No, he's saying when you take a dump.
Oh, when you take a dump, right. No, well,
we do that at our age, Mike. We do that anyway. In case we fall off during a particular nasty episode.
That's right. Especially when you're driving through New York and the road's bumping around. You've got to be careful.
That's right.
But the blowbacks.
Originally formed in 1981, the band called The Toilets.
Yeah, well, that you see, the Alarm was formed in 1981, but that was to hide our previous sins of being in the toilets.
Oh, the toilets.
That was from 1977. I saw the Sex Pistols almost 4 years ago to the day in 1976, and that was the sort of spark to get into a band.
You know, it's funny, when we came back from a commercial, I just started with a little Bob Dylan there, and you guys actually opened for U2 and Bob Dylan.
Yeah, got to sing with Bob Dylan. We played near Toronto here with Dylan and in Hamilton. We did two shows with Bob Dylan in 1988, which was a great experience. I remember coming across the border from America into Canada, and I stood behind Bob Dylan in the passport queue.
Like at immigration?
Yeah, I was just stood behind him, and a song came into my head, and I always thought it was a song that would end up on The Alarm's next album called No Frontiers, and I always think it was the big man upstairs sending it down to Bob Dylan, but he missed and got me instead.
That's amazing.
Wow.
And what were those guys, I mean, at that time you were sort of new, what were those guys kind to you?
Yeah, Bob Dylan, he liked staying in weird hotels without air conditioning. He liked staying in old motels with swimming pools, and we'd see him at the swimming pool. He liked swimming, and he'd talk to me a lot about Wales and Welsh poets and things like that, you know. And he was always wickedly funny. Always had a made you laugh, you know. He was really cool.
So all those years ago, The Alarm were huge in the alternative world, and as you said, Freddie, a station like Boom 97.3 in Toronto would play like a sort of an older state. What do they call those now? What's that format called? Greatest hits.
Greatest hits.
Right. Okay.
And then they play classic alternative, which that would
classical. So is the you were one of the founding members of the Alarm. So where what is your fan base now? Are they guys our age? You know, people in their 50s and early 60s.
It depends where we play. To be honest, in Britain, we've got quite a young following. We've just played Glastonbury and all the big festivals, and we've built a massive following against still in the North America. It depends where we go. You know, it's still going to be great in Toronto tonight. It's great in New York and LA, and it's always developing. We created a fake band in 2004. We felt like people had switched off to the Alarm. The media thought we were an old band and didn't have any relevance.
Oh, we know what that's like.
So we created a fake band.
We're the Alarm of radio announcers.
Yeah, that's right.
We should have changed our name years ago.
Well, we did. We changed the name. We created a fake band called the Poppy Fields, and we got 4 18-year-old kids to appear in the video. We pretended they were 18-year-old bands of BBC and MTV in
really?
The UK, and they fell for it hook, line, and sinker. The NME put us down. They were the big magazine at the time. They created, like, we got the single of the week and said, this is the best.
But it was all your music. You guys,
all the Alarm. Come on.
Excellent.
Yeah, we were in our 40s. You know, it was like three strikes, you know. It's like, you're old, you're out, you know. And then we charted the record into the top 20.
So how did you reveal that it was actually you guys?
Are we on Top of the Pops on the BBC rundown? We said, this isn't the Poppy Fields, as it was called. This is the Alarm.
So are you touring right now as Mike Peters or with the whole band?
Well, I'm doing a Mike Peters Presents the Alarm. I'm doing a sort of one-man show version of the Alarm. And all the advances in music allow me to sort of recreate an event that we held a show in on the 12th of April 1986. It was the world's first live satellite broadcast concert. It was with MTV and Much Music over here. And it went around the world from 3 o'clock in California. It went all around the world, and Live Aid had been the year before, but that wasn't an actual global satellite broadcast. It was the first time we did it, and it was there's masses of equipment there, and we had to have NASA on the phone to get the satellite overhead. But when you think now the parallels, everyone has got that same technology in their smartphone now. They can broadcast around the world. I can use technology to recreate the whole concert using drums and my feet, loop stations.
So it's just you on your own?
Yes.
So you're not touring with any of the other guys that are still in there? Because you have a touring band known
as
the Alarm.
That's right, yeah. Exactly.
You have room in that RV for them.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Is it still gratifying and satisfying? Is it still making you money?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been an independent artist since the 80s finished, really, and Nirvana came on and kind of challenged our whole generation, if you like. I've split the Alarm off into an underground setting and took control of the Alarm's music, the catalogue, and we've just built a massive thing on the
Alarm. You got it before Yoko got it, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we did. And, you know, and it was just... I suppose I was lucky in the sense that I'd worked in computers in 1975 and sort of always had
you were comfortable
world.
With the digital technology.
Absolutely, exactly.
So at the Hughes Room, you can go see Mike. And how long a show will you put on?
Like 2 hours tonight.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like seeing the band, but it's a recreation of an event that happened.
It's got to be grueling though. You're doing all that work and you're singing.
This is the grueling part.
Oh,
getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, we know.
So. Finishing late last night.
At the Alarm's Pinnacle, you guys were headliners. Would you play? How big of venues would you guys play as the Alarm? Not an opening for anyone.
Yeah, we would play to probably on our own paying audience, sort of 5,000 or 6,000 people.
Nice.
Kind of thing. We didn't get quite break into the arena mold, but we were on IRS Records. But we've always had a great life, you know, brilliant life for the band. We still hold our own with some big shows around the world. We're one of those bands that have got a following everywhere we go. We're not the biggest, but we've got a strong following. That's great.
This is Humble and Fred.
We've got more with the UK music legend Mike Peters from The Alarm coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. We're going to hear more about his RV or caravan. But first on The Best of Humble and Fred, a couple of very important messages, and they're formatted like a caravan.
Spearhead Brewing Company.
Freddie, you were telling me that you already had, you tried some?
Oh, the Hawaiian Pale Ale. Delicious. A bold 6%er. West Coast Pale Ale is brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple, naturally carbonated, unfiltered, and dry hop to provide a delicate carbonation and complex flavor. You know, that's a great description. I really enjoyed it. Sitting there in my Muskoka chair or my Yeah, Muskoka Cherry.
Mm.
Looking up the lake. The perfect pale ale. Fresh, citrusy character, great finish. Enjoyed it thoroughly. Try one. Available at the liquor store, Spearhead Brewing Company, the Hawaiian Pale Ale. Good all year round.
This is Humble and Fred.
Mike Peters, you're really a nice man. The Alarm. Just before the break ended, Mike and I were just talking about this Ron Howard film that just come out. And it's interesting because it's called The Beatles, The Touring Years. And they put it out in theaters if you want to go see it on a big screen, which I think would be neat. It's also available for free on the Movie Network, on HBO, that type of thing. And I watched a little bit of it last night. And what they've done is they've recreated the best they can the sound of the Beatles in when they were on tour. And for some reason, you know, we always think of the Shea Stadium shows and doing Ed Sullivan, but they did they did 25 American cities in 30 days on one of the tours. They just went out and played halls, not big ones, too, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 seaters. But the sound, you know, the sound when you see it on those old,
they're just like little amplifiers that you would have in your basement.
But what they've done in the film is they've augmented the sound so you get a feel for what it sounded like listening to it in say in some hall in Cleveland.
Now, is this just like a 2-hour movie or is it like it's not a series, is it?
No, it's a movie.
It's a movie.
With commentary from McCartney and Ringo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of it's the story you know. But what I think is really cool is just to see them as a working band.
That's it, yeah.
And they make the point, we all know the story of, as McCartney says, by the time they got to be world famous, they had their craft down. They were such a tight band that they could play in front of people and they could barely hear themselves, but they knew the music so well.
That's right, yeah.
How about, did you ever run into those guys? Anybody? McCartney, Ringo?
George Harrison, I met George Harrison. It's not long after we toured with Bob Dylan. We came up here. I went to see Bob Dylan in Birmingham while recording. And I got to the gig late. And there was a whole rumour going around that the Traveling Wilburys were going to play. And Bob Dylan did an amazing show. One of the few times or so when he really played the songs like we all know them and want to hear them.
As opposed to screwing around with them.
Yeah. And it was incredible. I was invited backstage and I walked into this room and I opened the door and there was George Harrison and Jeff Lynne. And I was like, you know, and they went, hey. And George Harrison said to Jeff Lynne, hey, it's the guy from The Alarm off the TV.
Come on.
The telly.
So
I went, hold on a minute. You're George Harrison. I'm supposed to recognize you.
Now, that must have been a thrill.
Oh,
man.
It was amazing. He was so great. He knew a lot about the band. He was talking to me like, you know, he was the fan. And I was like, well.
That's got
to
be mind blowing.
It was surreal. Oh, yeah, but he was great.
Yeah.
Until the next night, we went to see him again. And he started hitting on my wife. And I thought, George, just watch it.
Did he really?
But he was a great guy.
That cow.
He was a great guy.
Really, George Harrison hit on your wife?
He did. But the best.
Seriously, if you can't be much of a Beatles fan, because if he hit on my wife, I'd say, here, take her.
The best bit was, because I'd arrived late at the gig, I hadn't put any petrol or gas in my car. So on the way back, I was so excited, I realised, oh no, I ran out of petrol on the motorway on the M1 going south back down to London. And I was pushing my car with my wife behind the wheel to the petrol station. And this Daimler pulls along with the lights on inside. And I looked around and inside it was George Harrison. He'd spotted me pushing my own car, but he gave me the finger out of the window.
Did he really?
Yeah. And he was laughing his head off. And then so the next night when I saw him at the next gig at Wembley, he was all joking about it all. He was brilliant. And that's the sort of humour they had that comes across in the film, isn't
it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the other thing that comes across in the film is just how young they were.
Yeah.
You know, when they sort of hit in 1962 and 63, I think Harrison was 17 or no, he was 18 or 19. McCartney was 20 or 21. Lennon was 22. Like, it's ridiculous how young.
Yeah, and there was no blueprint, no guidebooks, no rock history books to see how people lived on the road.
And, you know, Mike, we've often talked about this, the Beatles, the stuff that they produced in their 20s, like their music was ahead of its time. How could somebody that young write about those things? And then we're saying your creativity, I guess, is at its peak in its 20s. Can you identify with that? Like, did songs come easier, music come easier to you in your 20s than it?
I think it's best to work faster, which is what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is, you know, a lot of people overthink making records. There's too many people involved in the process now that it weakens it. When the Beatles are making 2 albums a year.
In fact, it's funny you say that, because in the movie, one of the comments about halfway through is McCartney saying, No, it was George Martin said we were told to put out a new single every 3 months, mm-hmm. a new album every 6 months, like 12 songs.
Yeah. And they delivered.
And they delivered.
Them so, hits.
And there's all those great shots of McCartney and Lennon in the hotel room on a couple of beds pushed together, writing 12 songs every 6 months.
That's right, yeah. You know, there wasn't as much rock music around to compete against when they were writing. It was, they stumbled into an open field and they could take their pickings, you know, but they were still to be that focused to be able to come up with that amount of material. And they had a great producer behind them. Mm-hmm. And like fate brings a lot of great people. They had a great manager as well who was on top of it as well. So but you're right too.
There was a real sweet spot in time there where the American teenager was looking for a certain sound. They delivered. They had this look. All of that came together. But as Freddie said, we're always fascinated by the volume of great songs they had to churn out. But part of it, as the film reveals, they had to.
Right. But they had to. But it was also quality, because we've almost some of the song in my life, a song like that, they hadn't lived enough life to be able to write songs like that. Well, it's just how brilliant they were.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, they always use that sequence, a lot of Beatles things, when it's that end of day in the life when it sort of it goes through the chord and speeds up. And you see their life in pictures. They used it in this film where it's bam, 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 bam. And that's what it must have been like to live in the Beatles. They went, mm-hmm. they lived at the speed of light so fast. They went through fame and they went from the Cavern Club to Shea Stadium in a couple of years. It was an incredible rocket ride.
And there's a couple of times where the sort of news guys of the day or the mm-hmm. reporters with their square hair cuts. At one point early in the film, a guy is interviewing John Lennon. This is, you know, yeah. and he calls him Derek.
Yeah.
He says, he says to the guy, "And what's your name?" And Lennon goes, "Derek." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "So tell me, Derek." And Lennon goes, "No, it's John." And then there's a couple other news reports going, "The big question, when will the bubble burst? How about never?"
Yeah.
Like all those guys who predicted the thing was going to last 3 months.
Yeah.
At some point, 30 years later, they must have gone, "Well, that was dumb."
We often talked about that ridiculous
Al Cap
interview in Montreal with Lennon. So yours, Rain in the Summertime, I love that song. When you write a song like that at the time, and you guys were, you know, an alt-rock band, did you write that for radio? Did you write that for mainstream?
No, to be honest, it was the last song of the album, which you'll hear a lot from mm-hmm. artists. It was the last song we rehearsed in the production rehearsals. We hadn't played it live. It was just a little ditty that we put down. And we were working with John Porter, who produced The Smiths. And we did all the songs. He said, "Is there anything left in the can that you haven't showed me?" He said, "Well, I've got this one cassette." And we jammed this song once. And we played it to him. And he said, "Give it to me." And he created a little backing track with the drum machine, and then we played all on the top of it, and it became Rain in the Summertime.
Would this be your biggest song or no?
Yeah, I think it's the most recurrent played song. Yes. It still sounds contemporary.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. It still sounds like it could have been mm-hmm. released recently. Here's a little bit of it. Tour dates and all that stuff available at, what's the website, Mike?
TheAlarm.com.
It's funny.
Easy.
The more I talk about this Beatles thing that Mike and I have seen, you're going to love it. Because it's not like a bunch of stuff you've seen before. What I also like is some of the audio of them rehearsing songs. This, as you said, there's one sequence there. There's some song that they're just dicking around with.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can just kind of... And basically, McCartney said, our process was every day we'd arrive at 10, have some tea and a ciggy, as he says.
Yes.
And then he and Lennon would show the other guys the song. They'd and sort of demo it for them. Mm-hmm. They'd record it that day.
An hour and a half.
They'd have they learned it in 20 minutes. Then they'd have lunch, and that would be In My Life.
That's like, right, yeah.
It's mind-blowing. Because you think those songs are so significant, but to them it was just... Another song.
Another thing is the great songs arrange themselves. They make themselves.
What do you mean?
Well, if you've a really great song, it's like the great songs, like In My Life, it's probably been covered 1,000 times.
Right.
And no matter who covers it, it's still a great song. Mm-hmm. So the fact that John Lennon wrote a great song meant that you couldn't do wrong. You just can't go wrong with a song like that. And that's what you strive for as an artist. It's like Rain in the Summertime. we didn't realize how great it was, but it was a great song. And
did you like it right away?
Yeah,
did you think, okay, this is going
to
be great?
I didn't like the lyric. I always tried to. I thought we can't have more meaningful than "I love to feel the rain in the summertime." But this is where a great producer comes in. Someone like George Martin will say, "No, you've said what you need to say. Everyone will relate to that. That's a great message to put out there." And it was. I was trying to change it to something, the faith in the something or other, and I was singing on the mic, and I just couldn't beat what had just come out naturally in the process.
And what Howard's, you know, great songs are timeless too. That could be released now. We keep referring to "In My Life." That, can you imagine? I mean, that could be a hit now.
Absolutely, of course it could.
Speaking of which, current music, who do you follow? Who do you like?
I like a band from Wales where I live called Catfish and the Bottle Men. I think they're a good band. I find that personally, I've got two young kids and they listen to pop music, and I think the best writing, if you're looking for John Lennon in my life, the best writing is going on in pop music. I think rock music hasn't quite, it doesn't
really
hit as hard as it could or as it has done right now.
But "Rain in the Summertime" was written by you, I'm assuming, and Lennon and McCartney wrote, as Paul said in the documentary, nearly 300 songs together. But nowadays, it seems like a lot of great pop music, or stuff that's got hooks and little, you know, whatever, is written by committee.
There's definitely that. But that's you know, look, I saw the Sex Pistols 40 years ago, and it changed my life. And I think the legacy of punk is still there. It's still a lot of kids making music now that don't play. They can't play guitar, but they can play the computer. And they're cutting up and they're borrowing lyrics from their friend that they've met on the internet, or some guy they've met playing FIFA or something else. And it's all chopped up, and it's just, it is by community, but that's their
That's the way it is.
But yes, that's right. That's one time. I'm talking about like the mainstream Rihanna's and the, you know, sort of Beyonce. Those songs are being written by a staff of people, almost like Tin Pan Alley back in the 40s.
There is, but it's always been that way. You know, the Beatles broke that because, you know, you remember the story that, I can't remember the song now, but it became "How Do You Do" or something, was one they wanted the Beatles to do it, that Herman's Hermits had a hit with or something like that, you know. And they said, "No, we've got an even better one called Please Please Me," and off they went, you know. But that's always been the case. Even if you look at in the 80s, Bon Jovi, you know, buried in their record with songs written by Desmond Child. It's just that a lot of artists who want to keep the wheels turning on their brand, on their stage,
right,
touring band, they need to have a hit, so they go to all the lengths they do. You know, that's
we have a gem here in Canada.
I wouldn't like to think of the Beatles bringing in hired writers, would they? As they got,
no.
If they were still alive now, trying to find a hit, you know, I can't imagine that happening.
We have a band in Canada, a gem, called the Tragically Hip.
I know the Tragically Hip.
You know the Tragically Hip.
Great band, yeah.
Because really, they've never made it outside of Canada. So, I mean, that was going to be my question. Would you be aware of the Tragically Hip or any other Canadian acts?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the Tragically Hip were a band we came across through touring America. And, you know, we loved the band when we first saw them. And as I think coming, we related to them because coming from Wales, there were some brilliant bands in Wales that were sort of hampered by singing in the Welsh language. And they didn't have, we introduced bilingualism into it to allow the bands like the Super Furry Animals and Cat Tony, all these bands to come out. And nowadays, I don't think it matters where you come from. Now we live in a global arena.
You know, it's funny you say that, Mike, because the Tragically Hip, who we're playing now, 20 years ago, of the sort of connectivity of our planet, everyone sharing stuff on YouTube, they might have had a different path if people could have liked a Tragically Hip song and then shared it globally. Whereas what makes them so uniquely Canadian is because they were really only popular here.
Yeah.
It was almost like our thing.
Yeah.
And there wasn't as much sharing that went along, you know, when they first sprung up in the early 90s.
Well, I think of, like, in Britain, bands like The Jam, they were very British.
And
they were our thing, you know. They didn't really break so much.
Town Called Malice is still one of my favorite songs.
Song, you know? But I think then a lot of your success was defined by what record label you were on. If Tragically, I don't know what label.
That was part of it. They had some label troubles in the States and it never quite broke.
Exactly. And no one's going to invest in a band they don't own the whole piece of. They'll put their money into. We used to have it. We were on IRS Records. You know, our career, The Alarm's career path, the 80s mirrors REM's career for their first five albums, because we were both on the same label for five albums. And then IRS were, well, REM were lucky enough to get away from IRS, and they signed to Warner Brothers, and all of a sudden they had millions of dollars behind their records.
Right.
And that transformed the landscape sure. for them. If they'd never left IRS, they wouldn't have been the global band they are.
Interesting.
Does it? Yep. Do you have any, well, you don't seem bitter. We are. Compared to us, no one's bitter. Are you
bitter about maybe no. you think, oh, what could have been? Do you have some regrets?
I don't.
If you'd have had the REM path?
No, I never think about that, because if we'd meant to be on that path, we'd have been on it. Mm-hmm. This is the life. You know, look, I've lived with leukemia for 20 years, so I'm very happy for the life I have.
Wow.
I'm very grateful.
See, there you go. There's somebody who appreciates his life. And he woke up this morning in a trailer in our parking lot.
That's it, yeah. And I'm very glad to be here.
This is Humble and Fred.
Coming up on the Best of Humble and Fred, we have more of our conversations that you know and love, our timeless archive coming up. I'm Philip Hong on the Best of Humble and Fred, on air and online. We've got more from the Jukebox coming up.
Good one-on-one conversation is like making love, caressing each other with words and heady, engaging topics of conversation. And Humble and Fred do it every morning. They make love to each other, with the whole country listening in.
Legendary Humble and Fred Radio.
Best for life.
Canada's national morning show.
And a dangerous man.
They are not right in the head. Tedious, but I love them.
We've got a few more minutes with the Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you so kindly for listening, by the way, on air and online. We put so much work into this. I'm the librarian, by the way, and audio editor and producer and janitor for Humble and Fred. So I'm very happy that you've joined us, because we've got more of our conversations coming up. This is from our timeless archive, featuring conversation that is just plain fun and entertaining. And so let's start with where we left off, in fact. Let's start from the humble... What would you say? The Humble Howard health scare. We're going to hear more about his so-called gout. He actually has, you know, some kind of other inflammation. And we'll also hear about cures for scurvy now on the Best of Humble and Fred.
I was meeting with my group last night, living with gouty toe.
Gout's anonymous?
Gout. Living with the gout toe. I'm just a guy. Now I'm a guy walking around going, so when people say to me, how are you doing, Howard? Which sometimes people inquire. Now I've got to say, great. Except for the gout. The gout? Are you kidding me? How did I end up here at Gout on Gout Street? I take care of myself. I stopped drinking. Now I'm producing... kind of acid am I producing?
Uric
acid. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to the doctor?
Not yet. I'm taking care of... What's he going to tell me? First of all, you know, I'm a doctor. He's a doctor. We talk doctor stuff. What's he going to say? Hey, Howie. He calls me Howie. Hey, Howie. Guess what? You got gout. I go, yeah, that's why I'm here. I got it in my big toe. Classic gout gout location.
The same thing happened to me last time I went to my doctor. I said, hey, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And he said, don't that, do that. He said, don't do that. And I left.
That's right.
What?
I said, hey, doctor, hey, it hurts when I do this. He said, don't do that.
Don't do that.
You have the uric acid.
I always, what was that? Was that a Groucho?
No, it was, I think it was Henny Youngman.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Henny.
No one calls themselves Henny anymore. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just a guy. I'm living with gout now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this last night. I mean, that's a conversation. And I know I mentioned this in this other form on the show. I know it's going to sound like I'm repeating myself, but I have a new twist. Because I mentioned yesterday, the day before that, you know, if you listen to the evolution of the podcast, in 7 years, it's gone from, hey, I'm, you know, banging some 24-year-old to, and now I've got gout. Anyway, but I was thinking about that last night. There's a conversation. I've known you in my 20s, 30s, 40s, and now my 50s. So when we met each other in my late 20s, your early 30s, no part of our conversation was ever like, hey, how was your weekend, man? Oh, great. I got hammered Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday I had a gout flare-up.
Right.
Then like, I got shingles.
Then I got, oh, and, but I did get shingles.
What?
In my 30s.
Oh, no.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that. I thought it was just a 6-year-old thing, right?
I did too.
A 9-year-old thing.
I had early onset shingles.
Oh.
That, early onset.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
That was painful, by the way.
No, I know, but they didn't call it that, did they?
Yeah.
Did they?
Do you know, I remember going into Hal's office.
Oh, no, no, I know. I know you had them young, but they actually called them early onset?
No, I just made that up.
No, I thought so.
Yeah. No, but I had officially had shingles right around my chest. And it was only in one line. It's a nerve line right around my chest all the way around my back. You know, you were saying about your mom and her gout. You were saying yesterday that it got so bad sometimes that she couldn't have the sheet on her foot.
Yeah.
Because it would irritate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the same thing with the shingles. God, listen to me. I had the same thing with the shingles, is I couldn't have any fabric against it. It was just
irritating.
Well, and painful, burning.
Yes.
Because it's a nerve, it's a nerve malady.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the herpes zoster virus, if you must know. Anyway, now I'm talking, shouldn't we have figured gout out by now? Doesn't it sound like something that was around in the 1800s?
Right, like polio and other things like that. Flu, Spanish flu.
Well, they have figured it out.
Well, I know, but it's like, haven't we eliminated gout in our lifetime?
Well, you can by being careful with your diet.
Well, now I got to be careful with my diet. Don't want to do that. I like...
You talk about those conversations, and I've said it to my sweet Delise many times. Let's have a pact that when we get into our late 60s and 70s, when we're around people, we don't talk about our ailments.
Mm-hmm. I love that pact.
Because it gets right out of hand.
Yeah.
You know, my parents weren't too bad with it, but, you know, you'd call and you'd get a rundown of the doctor's appointments and stuff, because it can be depressing. And it doesn't change anything.
No.
And the other day, I went to pick up a prescription. There's this old guy, and you know, a lot of old people, they don't have people to talk to, so when they get the chance... That seems to be their favorite subject.
Right.
What, gout or their maladies?
No, just what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there, and I got a prescription. I want to talk to the pharmacist, but just before me is this man about 75 years old. And you could just tell he was desperate to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets the pharmacist, and the stuff he's saying. Then Tuesday, I'm going up to the Civic Hospital, and I got to see, I think it's like 2:15 is my appointment. Now, he's going to tell me what I have to do as far as the next couple of months. So then after that, you know, my knee's still bugging me, so I'm going to have to go see the orthopedic guy. And it's like, in the pharmacist, you can see him drifting away, right?
That's right.
It had nothing to do with the actual medicine he was getting that day. And I thought, that's the guy's world now. Like, get a hobby.
You know, I'm around a lot of guys sort of between 55 and 70 that are golfers. And now I've noticed that a lot of the conversation is, did you hear Buddy? He's getting his hip replaced.
I know.
And I heard about Buddy the last time I had this conversation, or overheard a conversation about a buddy who was getting both hips replaced, I guess, at the same time. And my reaction is always the same. Yeah, but he's fat. Probably fat. Because I see a lot of big fat guys getting hips and knees.
No, I know. Hey, wonderful they can do that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to... Just before we get off gout, and thank you so much for all the people that are sending me gout remedies. To me, it sounds like, hey, did you hear Howard had scurvy? Honestly, I was thinking that last night. I'm like, is that a conversation my daughter's going to be having? Oh, yeah, I think my dad has something wrong with his foot. Is it scurvy?
No, it's smallpox.
Smallpox? Is it the TB?
Yeah. Oh, you got the consumption of some sort.
Yeah, I've got the consumption. Anyway.
Got some snake oil on the side there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just sounds like something that should have been eliminated before I got it.
A couple of weeks ago. You know, I broke my foot. I'm getting some x-rays.
Mm-hmm. Well, you broke your foot?
So I'm sitting in the waiting room, and this guy blows by me on crutches.
Oh.
F this, F that. I'm so sick of this place. I can't be bothered. People, they treat you like shit around here. I can't stand this place. Then he goes into the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
and I hear all this banging around and smashing around, and he had to give a urine sample. So then he comes out, and he gets the urine sample, he slams it on the desk, and then grabs one of his crutches and throws it. It hits the chair beside me.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Son of a bitch.
So I said, hey, buddy. And he turns around, and he looks at me, and I know the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've known the guy in Brampton for years and years and years.
Oh.
And he looked like hell. But then he proceeds to tell me he's in Ottawa at some concert, slips on the ice, falls, breaks his hip.
He's your age?
He'd be a little older. Falls, breaks his hip. They do emergency surgery. They end up making, in the end, one leg is about a half inch shorter than the other because of this surgery. And he told me ever since then his life has been hell. Because it hurts. It's awkward. You can't walk right.
No.
There's an ache all the time. And he said, it's turned my life upside down. So I said, that explains the little performance here? And he goes, yeah, that explains the performance. He said, because I come into the hospital, and he says, I so don't want to be here. All because I fell one night. This has become my world. And I said, I don't like the attitude of the people around here. And I don't like the way they treat me. Our health care isn't nearly what they think it is, and on and on and on. Yeah. I said, Mark, felt bad for the guy. And then you're sitting there going, I'm a little broken foot here. You know, it's bad as you think you have it, there's always someone worse. And why is it that someone worse makes you feel better? Like, ha, ha, ha.
Well, because you think it's human nature. You think, okay, well, my foot's got a... You had a slight break in the top of your foot, right? Slight break.
Have I ever explained the whole thing to you? When did I tell you when my next appointment is on this?
Sure you
on
did.
This bitch? It's next Tuesday.
Okay. I don't know how you're going
to... 10:45.
I don't know how you're going to fit that in with all your other appointments. Yeah. Because it's human nature to think, well, I've got it bad, but not as bad as cranky half inch.
Yeah.
So Jody Sokolov sent me a note. Hey, Humble, Happy New Year. Because, you know, the Rosh Hashanah was, I think it's over now.
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Yo!
You know, I think in the Jewish calendar it's like 67:15 or something.
Wow.
And, of course, the Jewish joke every year is, oh, I keep writing 67:14 on my checks. Who writes checks anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Jody says, Happy New Year. Re the gout. It is painful and will keep coming back, she says. Advice. See your doctor or a rheumatologist.
Really?
Now we got to go to the rheumatologist? There are links to gout, high uric acid levels, and heart health. She says you can get medication, but what I'm going to not go the medication route because I've gotten a few other people message me yesterday and saying there's lots of stuff you can take, kind of like
Sulpermetoprol, palmetto.
Yeah, that thing you were taking for your spongy prostate.
Mm-hmm. Saw palmetto? Metal or whatever?
Celery seeds. You apparently make a celery seed.
Isn't it just easier to take a pill for a couple of days?
Well, I don't know. But you're supposed to get a big bunch of celery seeds, and then you cook them in a pot.
Yeah.
Then you make a tea, and you drink it. And when my buddy told me about the celery seed tea, I just thought, this is like in the Clampets and the Hillbillies when one of the kids would get sick. Ellie Mae or Jethro, and Granny would make a poultice out of like mustard and a bunch of gauze. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm making a mustard celery seed poultice for my gouty toe.
That's great.
This is Humble and Fred.
An actual health scare coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong, and features one of the boys. I won't tell you whom until after we have a couple of very, very important messages.
Hey, FYIMusicNews.ca, go there. All you need to know about what's going on in the Canadian music industry. They've just announced the 2018 Slate Family Polaris Heritage Prize winners. It's all there.
I'm on.
SoCan Ambitions. They go global. All right, which is, you know, big news for people in the music industry, obviously. Ted Nugent on his roots and love for rock and roll's pioneers. Ted Nugent, don't know if I like that. Bit of a weirdo, wouldn't you say? FYI Music News, today's new track, everybody, is Tim Baker, Dance. And don't forget, there's a job section. Yes, if you're looking for a job, want to work within this exciting industry, go to FYIMusicNews.ca.
Well, sure, I remember Humble and Fred. I mean, we used to hang out together. We'd laugh together. We played together. We bathed together, you know. Then I got transferred to medium security, and I've never seen neither of them since.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. The Best of Humble and Fred continues with some timeless conversations. And in fact, the theme of this year is everybody's got something. And in this segment, we're going to hear more about Fred's something. He took a month to really reveal it in public. In fact, we knew about it privately, but it was one of those struggles that were memorable. So let's hear more about Fred's TERP and the event that's called TERPmas.
Happy TERPmas Day. I wish you a happy TERPmas. For you people that don't know, the Fred Man, his something turned out to be a prostate shaving.
Yes, sirree. Yes, sirree.
As documented.
Funny.
As documented quite extensively the last 7 days, we've outlined the fact that today you're having surgery. And, you know, I'd forgotten that you have to be in the hospital for a couple of days.
One night at least, yes.
Well, where do we send our thoughts and prayers?
To the hospital, I guess.
Do you drop them off? Is there
no,
like
the thing is, you have the procedure, right?
No.
And then there's internal bleeding.
What?
You can't leave the hospital until the bleeding stops.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually... Geez, look, I'm really throwing it out there, aren't I?
Oh, yeah, man.
Until you can pee on your own.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait until you're not passing blood anymore.
We can... I should televise that.
No. You should put it into your...
Live it.
Everybody's looking for content.
You should put it into your Insta stories.
Mm-hmm. You know, last night I was just, and I should have brought it in. I was reading my catheter pamphlet.
Yes, you should have.
As I do. I've read it, you know, cover to cover.
You know, the catheter pamphlet is, I was going to read it, but I'm hoping they'll turn it into a movie.
Okay, we all know what a catheter is, right?
Yes.
This hose, literally, thin hose. Well, in my case, not so thin.
Oh, please.
Hose.
In your case, a toothpick.
Literally comes out of your urethra.
Urethra Franklin.
Turns and bends and goes into a bag, which is affixed to your leg.
Right. How is it strapped to your leg, by the way? Is it Velcro?
Straps with little buttons. I showed you.
No, you didn't.
When you came to my house the next day, I showed you.
Did you have your bag out that day? I don't remember.
Anyway.
So anyways, you got the catheter pamphlet.
And I forgot the section that said, avoid sex while wearing a catheter.
Oh.
It actually says that in there. You know, the do's and don'ts? One of the don'ts is avoid sex.
How exactly?
Really? I have no idea. I can't even think. Because I'm thinking, even if you're an over-the-top horn dog,
yes.
Still, what would that be? Exactly.
Well, I think the fact that you have a bag strapped to your leg and a tiny hose in your pee hole would probably be enough for your wife to say, I think we'll take a break.
Oh no, I get that. But I mean, even say she was into that type of thing.
What, catheter sex?
How would you do it?
Like, I don't know.
So don't I'm know. Thinking, does that mean, you know, avoid erections?
I guess, yeah, probably.
Well, in your case, that's not that big.
Well, it's not that big.
There's a long hose.
Listen.
What is this? 1999.
This conversation alone is going to help me avoid erections.
Hey, you want to avoid
but
erections?
But anyway, I just got a chuckle from that again.
I'd say.
As I was reading it.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that would be.
1-833-HF-STINK. Tell us about your catheter bag and your straps. Well, no, I'm concerned. I'm a little bit, you know, I want you to know I'm there for you. If I wasn't golfing this afternoon, I'd obviously be at the hospital when you came to.
Oh, I know you would. I mean, no need, but I know you would be. Because
just before the show, I said, well, I'll call you when I'm done. And you said, well, I'm still going to be in the hospital. I'm like, I forgot.
This is not day surgery.
I know it's not day surgery.
What would make you think this was day surgery?
I have no idea. Ooh. How dare you? You can't pull a prostate shaving off in one day.
But well, you can. In fact, it only takes about 40 minutes.
Right.
But
now, in the pamphlet, it says avoid sex. And what does it say about day of surgery, though? You have to have a antiseptic shower. What is the deal? You can't have water. You can't.
I have a theory on this. No, my wife had a theory on this because it was funny because when I'm at the hospital in my pre-op, mm-hmm. they said, have you heard of these antiseptic sponges? And I said, no. And they said, well, down in the pharmacy, they sell them. It's two for $10 or something. And I thought, okay, that's weird. I've never heard of that before. So I went down and I bought the two sponges. And then I got home and I'm reading how to use the sponge. Mm. And then it says, and there's a sentence. It says, if you don't have sponges, just use regular soap and water.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, that's...
Oh.
So you think the surgeon's got...
I don't know what to think.
Stock in this antiseptic sponge company.
I bought them anyway, and it's fine. And then it said, if you don't have the sponges, have a shower the night before surgery and then the day of. So then I'm thinking, what do I do? Today I have these two sponges.
Mm-hmm.
But Delee said, you know, it's probably because a lot of people probably go into the hospital gross, right? Like dirty, like with bad hygiene. So this is probably an over-the-top thing. Because not everybody has good hygiene.
Oh,
yes, and I bet the hospital sees a lot of like, whoa, like really?
Yeah.
Like, well, could you not have done better? So I decided this morning when I get up, I had a shower with my own soap and water.
Mm.
And then when I go home, just 2 hours prior, I'm going to have another rinse off and then give myself a scrubbing with the antiseptic sponge.
Now, again.
Would you like to help me with that?
Absolutely. I was going to say, if you don't put that up on Instagram, you're missing a huge, you're missing a very big opportunity. No, I think you're right. I mean, Delise is right, obviously, that some people's hygiene, you know, isn't the same as others. The standards vary from person to person. But having been involved in surgery, having had surgery on myself and having assisted on several, it's also the precaution of, of infection.
Oh, of course.
And they, I think they want to just make sure that those areas, and they're, by the way, before they do the surgery, they're going to do it again. In fact, they're going to take this.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, too.
Yeah, but think about where they're doing it. It's all.
And they're really going to concentrate on my love wand area.
Well, yeah. Your love wand. Cocktail wiener. Yeah.
In fact, they'll probably bring in a power washer.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to bring a water pick in.
Yeah.
One little toothpick.
Yes.
Okay, we're done. Well, what I was going to say is they're going to wipe you down with this yellow antiseptic
right. All
around that area. Did they ask you anything or did they give you any instructions to make sure you get rid of your
no, actually.
Hair?
Will they do the shaving then, maybe?
I'm not doing it. Sean?
I guess for ease of access, maybe, or...
I don't know.
Well,
maybe I can give myself a little trim this morning before I rinse off.
Well, if down there grows like your eyebrow hair, you better get after it.
Right,
no, you're good today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the other day you had one that was sticking out about 3 inches.
Delise must have plucked it.
When we were at Boone's place,
yeah,
I kept looking over. I'm like, God dang, that...
Well, why didn't you pluck it?
What am I supposed to do with it?
Reach over, grab it, and
give it a rip.
Mm.
I wanted to.
And, you know, they just come out of nowhere.
No,
yeah,
I know.
They do.
And absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have this one on my right eyebrow that is growing way faster than the others.
Mm-hmm.
But that area, somebody is going to trim it up. Might as well be you. And don't take it down to the wood, but...
No.
But they're... So that's all I'm trying to say is the last thing you're going to see is they're going to come in and they're going to swab that whole area from your belly button to way down your legs. They're going to mush it all with this the yellow surgical stuff. You're going
to
be fine.
Well, why would they tell me to use an antiseptic sponge down there without telling me to shave?
This, I have no idea. That's why I'm asking. Can you give me... Where's your pamphlet? Where's your catheter
pamphlet?
It's
not here.
Oh, damn.
That wouldn't be in the... That would be in the pre-op prep page.
Ah.
And it just says use the sponge. It doesn't say anything about that.
You're right. How do you feel, by the way? How do you feel?
I'm talking to a guy. I feel fine.
Yeah?
It's funny. And I'll tell you, it's my counselor, Dougie Willems. It's funny. People mean well.
Yes.
So he calls me yesterday, I'm talking to him, and I said, I'm having surgery, and I explained it to him, and he goes, ooh, wow. And I said, what? And he goes, you're still going to be able to, like, you know what, eh? And I said, yes, Doug, I am. And then he goes, you know, my father-in-law, he had problems down in that area. I don't think it was prostate. I think he had a problem with his, urinary tract, and they couldn't fix it. So they put a little hole, like, under his bag, and now he sits down to pee.
There you go.
That I would like to see.
I said, what? And he said, oh, he's great. He's good. He's good to go. He just, you know, has to sit down and feel like a woman. It's good to know, Doug. Thank you.
Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm.
Re-elect Doug.
So that again, my
re-elect Doug.
Let's get this. Let's send this to his opposition. You want some dirt on Doug?
So then my mind race starts to race, right? And I am, you know, I'm thinking the doctor's going to come in and say, Fred, good news, bad news, yeah. You know? We get in there, everything looks good. However, there's going to be a little change plan here. Put yourself a little opening there underneath, and which wouldn't be the worst thing.
No, there would be a lot.
Wouldn't be the best thing.
But a lot of things could be worse.
Yes.
In that area, and let's not dwell on those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's hope it goes off as it will, and all will be well.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
Thank you kindly for listening to this edition of The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Hong. More on the way. And this episode of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by Gig Sky, Screenprint, The Retirement Sherpa, Spearhead Brewing Company, The Chambers Plan, HomegrownKits.ca, and FYI Music News. We've got more on air and online at HumbleandFredRadio.com.